things we wanted to do so that we could deliver project templates before the year ended. It was a great feature, and customers ultimately loved it, but we had to rush it. That's what promises lead to. Rushing, dropping, scrambling, and a tinge of regret at the earlier promise that was a bit too easy to make. Promises pile up like debt, and they accrue interest too. The longer you wait to fulfill them, the more they cause to pay off, and the worse the regret. When it's time to do the work, you realize just how expensive that yes really was. Many companies are weighed down by all sorts of prior obligations to placate. Promises salespeople made to land a deal. Promises the project manager made to the client. Promises the owner made to the employees. Promises one department made to another. Saying yes later is the easy way out of anything. You can only extend so many promises before you've spent all your future energy. Promises are easy and cheap to make. Actual work is hard and expensive. If it wasn't, you just have done it now rather than promised it later. French intellectual and writer Simone de Beauvoir broke up her day by taking a 4-hour break each afternoon to visit friends. Copycats. And if the whole world's singing your songs and all of your paintings have been hung, just remember what was yours is everyone's from now on. And that's not wrong or right, but you can struggle with it all you like. You'll only get uptight. Wilco, What Light? You can get red-faced and furious that a competitor copied your product, stole your design, and reapportioned your ideas. But what good does it do? Getting angry only hurts you. It zaps energy you could have spent doing better work still. It blurs your focus on what's next, keeping you locked in on the past. And again, for what? Do you think that competitor is going to have a revelation and realize the error in their ways because you got upset? If they had such insight, they probably wouldn't have copied you in the first place. Do you think your customers are going to care? They just want a good product at a great price. Few will have the time or empathy for a sob story about what the competition did or didn't do. We've been ripped off and cloned 100 times, and that's probably underestimating it. Our designs have been lifted wholesale from our product, our words repurposed and used against us, our ideas hijacked and attributed elsewhere. That's life. If you want to be calm, you have to move on. To be fair, it used to bother us. In the early days, when everything was so fragile it was easy to freak when you saw your stuff with someone else's name on it. What's worse is when it's a poor copy. Then you're just pissed that someone else is making you look bad. But really, unless you've patented it, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. Besides, copying does more harm to the copier than to the copied. When someone copies you, they are copying a moment in time. They don't know the thinking that went into getting you to that moment in time, and they won't know the thinking that'll help you have a million more moments in time. They're stuck with what you left behind. So really, chill out. Accept the mild frustration for a moment, and then let it go. Change control. You'll often hear that people don't like change, but that's not quite right. People have no problem with change they asked for. What people don't like is forced change. Change they didn't request on a timeline they didn't choose. Your new and improved can easily become their what the fuck when it was dumped on them as a surprise. We've learned that lesson over and over again making Basecamp. We'd come up with a new design that moved the stuff around a bit too much to make room for something better, and all we'd hear is, "What did you do to my app? I liked it just how it was. Change it back." The standard playbook in software is to dismiss users like that. Hey, this is the price of progress, and progress is always good, always better. That's myopic and condescending. For many customers, better doesn't matter when comfort, consistency, and familiarity are higher up on their value chain. This doesn't mean your new work sucks. Just that people are usually in the middle of something that's more important to them than a change to your product. They're already invested in what they have to do, and they're already familiar with how they're going to do it. And then you toss a change at them that immediately makes their life a little more complicated. Now they have a new thing to learn right in the middle of having an old thing to do. It's taken us a long time and a number of missteps to learn this core truth about selling. Sell new customers on the new thing and let old customers keep whatever they already have. This is the way to keep the peace and maintain the calm. This is why we still run three completely different versions of Basecamp: our original software that we sold from 2004 to 2012, our second version that we sold from 2012 to 2015, and our third version that launched in 2015. Every new version was better, but we never force anyone to upgrade to a new version. If you signed up for the original version back in 2007, you can keep using that forever. And a significant number still do. And we love that. So why didn't we just stop and stick with the original version of Basecamp? Because we've had new ideas along the way. Technology and design has changed. We've evolved. But our evolution is at our pace, and new customers today expect something different than new customers did a decade ago. But that doesn't mean we should force our earliest customers to follow along at our pace. It also doesn't mean you should invite your customers to check out your latest offering. But it should be an invitation, not a demand. Once you start pushing too hard, some will rightfully resist, and then suddenly you're in a skirmish. There's nothing calm about that. It's not free to honor old agreements or maintain old products. That's the price of having a legacy. That's the price of being successful enough that you have customers who liked you before you made your most recent thing. You should celebrate that. Be proud of your heritage. Startups are easy. Stay-ups are hard. Many entrepreneurs put everything they have into starting their business. Long nights, loads of focus, and lots of love. And then they launch, utterly exhausted by the sprint. Now it's finally done, they think. If only. Getting things off the ground is so hard that it's natural to expect it'll just get easier from here. Except it doesn't. Things get harder as you go, not easier. The easiest day is day one. That's the dirty little secret of business. As you grow, you hire people. With people come personalities. With personalities come office politics and 100 other challenges of human nature. As customers start to notice you, so does the competition. Now you're in someone else's crosshairs. When you were launching, you were all offense. Now you have to worry about playing defense, too. Before you know it, your costs balloon. It becomes more expensive to keep the lights on. Profits seem further away as you grow and expand. Sound like gloom and doom? It's not. Not at all. It's all really exciting. But it's also reality. Business gets harder after you launch, so it makes sense to mentally prepare for what comes after launch. If you think it's all sunshine and roses ahead, you're going to be caught off guard. If you understand what the future might look like, you can visualize it and be ready when the rain doesn't let up. It's all about setting expectations. Ultimately, startups are easy. Stay-ups are hard. Keeping the show running for the long term is a lot harder than walking on stage for the first time. On day one, every startup in the world is in business. On day 1,000, only a fraction remain standing. That's reality. So pace yourself. Don't burn out early thinking the hard part is behind you. Playwright Tony Kushner writes longhand with fountain pens on yellow legal pads and stops when he runs out of ink. No big deal or the end of the world. Here's something that should be obvious. People don't like to have their grievances downplayed or dismissed. When that happens, Even the smallest irritation can turn into an obsessive crusade. Imagine you're staying at a hotel, and the air conditioning isn't working right. You call the front desk to mention it, and they say, oh yeah, they know about that, and someone is going to come fix that next week, after you've left. In the meantime, could you just open a window down to that noisy, busy street? Not a word of apology, no tone of contrition. Now, what was a mild annoyance, that it's 74 degrees when you like to sleep at 69, is suddenly the end of the world. You swell with righteous fury, swear you'll write a letter to management, and savage the hotel in your online review. Jean-Louis Gasset, who used to run Apple France, describes the situation as the choice between two tokens. When you deal with people who have trouble, you can either choose to take the token that says, it's no big deal, or the token that says, it's the end of the world. Whichever token you pick, they'll take the other. The hotel staff in the example above clearly took the it's no big deal token, and as a result forced you to take the it's the end of the world token. But they could just as well have made the opposite choice. Imagine the staff answering something like this. We're so sorry. That's clearly unacceptable. I can completely understand how it must be almost impossible to sleep when it's so hot in your room. If I can't fix this problem for you tonight, would you like me to refund your stay and help you find a different hotel room nearby? In any case, while we're figuring out the solution, allow me to send up a bottle of ice water and some ice cream. We're terribly sorry for this ordeal and we'll do everything to make it right. With an answer like that, you're almost forced to pick the it's no big deal token. Yeah, sure, some water and ice cream would be great. Everyone wants to be heard and respected. It usually doesn't cost much to do either. And it doesn't really matter all that much whether you ultimately think you're right and they're wrong. Arguing with heated feelings will just increase the burn. Keep that in mind the next time you take a token. Which one are you leaving for the customer? The good old days. Just a few years ago, we made a number of different products. Today, we make just one, Basecamp. We gave up everything else and the potential of millions more in revenue so we could focus in rather than pan wide. Companies typically downsize their offerings when they're not doing well. We did the opposite. We cut back in the best of times. At the moment we scaled back, business had never been better. You don't hear about that a lot in business. Turning down growth, turning down revenue? Companies are culturally and structurally encouraged to get bigger and bigger. But over the years, we've talked to many entrepreneurs stuck in always in growth mode. And while many of them are proud of what they've achieved, just as many speak with longing in their voices about the good old days when their business was simpler and smaller, the days with less complexity, hassle, and headaches. As we continued to hear fellow entrepreneurs reminiscing about the good old days, the more we kept thinking, why didn't they just grow slower and stay closer to the size they enjoyed the most? Whatever the pressures, there's no law of nature dictating that businesses must grow quickly and endlessly. There's only a bunch of business axiom baloney like, if you're not growing, you're dying. Says who? We decided that if the good old days were so good, we do our best to simply settle there, maintain a sustainable, manageable size. We'd still grow, but slowly and in control. We'd stay in the good days. No need to call them old anymore. So we've decided to stay as small as we can for as long as we can, rather than continue to invent new products, take on more responsibilities, and grow more obligations. We continually aim to pare down and lighten the load, even when times are great. Cutting back when times are great is the luxury of a calm, profitable, and independent company. Today, we're more like we were 12 years ago than we were 5 years ago. Intentionally. It feels great. All the while, we've been keeping healthy profits, increasing our benefits for our employees, and creating an environment where people can do the best work of their careers. There's nothing old or crazy about that. Japanese marathon runner Yuki Kawachi, who won the 2018 Boston Marathon, trains just once a day because he has a full-time government job and believes in respecting his body's natural mileage limit. Last, choose calm. A business is a collection of choices. Every day is a new chance to make a new choice, a different choice. Are you going to continue to let people chip away at other people's time? Or are you going to choose to protect people's time and attention? Are you going to keep trying to squeeze 10-hour days or 60-plus hours a week out of people? Or are you going to choose to make a reasonable number of hours count for more? Are you going to continue to force people to pay attention to a dozen real-time conversations all day long? Or are you going to choose to relieve people from the conveyor belts of information and give them the focus that their best work requires? Are you going to continue to expect people to respond immediately to everything? Or are you going to choose contemplation and consideration prior to communication? Are you going to continue to burn more money than you earn, hoping that one day profit will finally materialize? Or are you going to choose to give endless growth a rest until the numbers work? Are you going to continue to pile on more work and repeatedly miss deadlines? Or are you going to choose to give teams control over what can be reasonably accomplished given the time? Are you going to keep pulling people off one incomplete thing to jump onto another incomplete thing? Or are you going to choose to finish what you started before moving on to the next? Are you going to continue to say, "That would never work in our business"? Are you going to continue to say, "If the client calls at 11 p.m., I have to answer the phone"? Are you going to continue to say, "It's okay to ask someone to work while they're on their vacation"? Or are you going to finally choose to make a change? You have a choice. And if you don't have the power to make things change at the company level, find your local level. You always have the choice to change yourself and your expectations. Change the way you interact with people. Change the way you communicate. Start protecting your own time. No matter where you live in an organization, you can start making better choices. Choices that chip away at crazy and get closer to calm. A calm company is a choice. Make it yours. Thanks for listening. This is Eileen Stevens. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work by Jason Fried and David Heinemeier Hansen, presented by Harper Business and Harper Audio. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Iris McElroy. Text copyright 2018 by Jason Fried and David Heinemeier Hansen. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.